The National Broadcasting Company presents Radio City Playhouse, Attraction 31. Ladies and gentlemen, here's the director of Radio City Playhouse, Harry W. Junkin.
Thank you, Bob. Friends, it is once again our privilege to welcome a very talented actor to his first appearance on Radio City Playhouse. Our star tonight is David Gothard, a young man who has been a member of that very limited circle of top-notch radio actors for some 8 years. Here is David Gothard as Babe Sherman in Wardrobe Trunk, Attraction 31, on Radio City Playhouse.
If I'd only not answered when she knocked at the door. If I'd only kept quiet, she'd have gone away. She'd have thought I was out and gone away. I was what they call working Paris. In a big city, it's pretty easy to pick up money without attracting too much attention. Ponies, gambling, a little blackmailing, married women who don't like their husbands to know what they're doing. All right, so I'm a heel. The fact remains that nothing would have happened if I just kept quiet when she knocked at the door. Therese Germain, her name was. Tiniest girl I ever saw. She was like a little bird, fragile, delicate. I spotted her selling some guy a gold cigarette case in one of the best jewelry stores in the Rue de la Paix. When I try, I can make quite an impression. Therese wasn't any different from the rest. The build-up took a month, taking her to lunch every day, calling for her every night, ignoring the stuff in the showcases as though it didn't exist. I had to tear my eyes away from it, pretend I wasn't interested, and look down at her. On the day it happened, we'd had lunch together. I took her back to the store, and she insisted on showing me some pearls. She insisted, as though I didn't know exactly what I was after.
You must look at these. They're so, so beautiful.
Not as beautiful as you.
Look at them. Are they not beautiful?
Yeah, I guess so.
So pale. Shimmering like the streetlights when there is the fog.
Well, how much? Just tell me and I'll buy them for you.
Oh, I think for the moment, in your money, it's $75,000.
To wear around your neck? Try them on.
Oh, I think I should not. The silly professor.
Oh, come on, come on. Let's see how they look on you. Turn around. I'll fasten them.
All right.
Oh, wait a minute. I think the clasp was broken. Oh, I'm sorry, Theresa.
Oh, give them to me.
Well, you better put them away.
Yes. You go now. I see you tonight.
You see me tonight positively.
The same place?
About 8.
About 8.
Love me?
Dear tonight. Now, Coco, I must get to work.
Okay, honey. See you tonight. I deliberately let the pearls drop to the floor and then stooped to pick them up. It was a cinch to make the switch. The ones she put back in the case weren't worth more than $100. I left the shop like I was on air. That was it. I'd done it. I would never have to see her again. I had a ticket on the American Statesman sailing from Cherbourg the next day at 1. That night I went to a movie alone. A good, solid American movie. Lana Turner. I'd had enough of French women. I came home and slept just fine. I had to be up at 7. The boat train left at 8. The packing didn't take long. And I was so glad to be getting out of Paris that I felt like singing.
East side, west side, all
when I feel like singing at 7:15 in the morning, things have to be
London
just
London Bridge is falling down.
That's the way they were at 7:15 in the morning.
Hello. Yes, Porter, Mr. Sherman. Well, speak English, can't you?
No, I've just one piece, a wardrobe trunk. It'll be ready in 10 minutes if you come up. All right, thanks.
Let's see. Shirts, ties, underwear, socks.
That's everything. All right, all right. I told you 10 minutes. Can't you tell the time?
That's when I shouldn't have answered the door. I should have known that it wasn't the porter. He couldn't have gotten upstairs in 30 seconds, but I didn't think. I never dreamed.
All right, I'm coming.
Trace, I told you not to come here. I told you.
Oh, Bibby, you're safe.
But of course I'm safe.
I imagine all sorts of things that you're killed with a taxi.
Oh, don't be ridiculous.
I wait last night for hour and hour.
Oh, Therese.
You not come and put Therese to worry.
Look, I told you not to come here. Go down to the corner and wait at the coffee shop.
No.
I'll meet you and we'll have breakfast. Everything's fine, Therese.
There's no way to get... Franz, you're backing.
For Pete's sake, keep your voice down.
You're going away. You're leaving, Therese. You're going to that thing awful I can see.
Shut up, will you?
No, I will not shut up. I will not shut up. You cannot do this to me.
All right, come in, come in. But for Pete's sake, keep your voice down.
You cannot do this to me, Bebe, please. You're the first man I love like this. Please, Bebe, you cannot do this.
Look, look, Therese. Look here, take my handkerchief. Now stop crying and listen. What's the matter, Therese? Therese, what is it? Well, don't stand there staring at me.
Look, I can see them hanging from your pocket, the pearls.
That's just a little present for my mother.
Let me see.
Now, don't get excited.
Let me see, I said.
Will you keep quiet?
Give them to me.
Don't get excited, Therese.
Is there a present for your mother? Let me see
them.
No. You stole them. When you dropped them yesterday, you stole them. You stole them.
Keep your voice down.
Give them to me.
All right, you asked for it. You're a dumb little French dame and you're duller than a pair of shoes. The build-up was strictly professional. The dinners, the dancing, the guff, strictly for business. I got the pearls and I switched another string. And unless you keep quiet, they'll think you did it.
You big, 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 big!
We were both at a white heat of rage and hate and fear. I was scared stiff at the noise she was making. I put my hand over her mouth. She got away and made for the door. I grabbed her and she started to scream again. Then I heard the porter outside the door, and I grabbed her around the throat. All of a sudden, she went limp, dead limp. And like a Roman candle bursting in my face, the thought hit me that she was dead. She'd told me that her heart was bad. I didn't mean to strangle her. I didn't hold her more than 10 seconds. Nobody strangled that fast. Her heart just stopped. She just died on me like that. Even though I knew it was useless, I tried to bring her to. I tried with everything in me to make her live again. Therese! Therese! Oh, dear God Almighty, what have I done to her? Who is it?
Monsieur, la malle, c'est prêt.
What?
The trunk of monsieur.
It's not packed yet. Come back in 10 minutes.
Monsieur, we missed the train. It is already 7:30.
10 minutes!
Hurry, monsieur!
Stop yelling at me! When I'm ready, I'll call you.
Yeah, monsieur, but hurry, you will miss your train.
What can I do? What can I do? I can't leave her here. They'll find her 10 minutes after I'm gone. The train takes 5 hours to Cherbourg. They can stop me with a telegram that takes 20 minutes. What'll I do?
And then, looking at the trunk, I knew. I'd have to take her with me. Once we got to sea, I'd throw her overboard. Like all wardrobe trunks, one side was entirely open for suits. The other was a scramble of little holes and drawers. It wasn't a particularly well-made trunk. I pulled out all the drawers, ripped out the thin last partitions until both sides were wide open. Just the metal shell remained. She was very tiny. When I was through, nothing was left out. I got back every nail, every board, every flattened drawer. And then I got it shut.
Porter! Porter! Porter!
Yes, monsieur, I'm coming, I'm coming. You miss your train now. It is but 20 minutes before 8.
Shut up and get moving. This thing goes right in the taxi with me, understand?
No, monsieur.
You what?
I don't understand, monsieur. C'est impossible. It is too big.
In the taxi. I said double fare, triple fare, but in the taxi. Now get going. We got it into the taxi. I was sweating and panting, almost sick. That taxi driver would never forget me, never. If they asked him afterwards about a guy with a trunk, he'd be able to draw them a picture. The same thing happened at the station. An argument that it was too big to go into the train compartment with me. And finally, I got my way, and they put the trunk in with me. I sat down as if the seat were magnetized. Just slumped. Sick with relief and, well, just sick. Then, I saw his name, E.B. Fowler, on his luggage. He was sitting across from me reading a paper. And I knew he was a cop, an American cop. I knew it. I could feel it, sense it. I ached with it. I tried to figure out whether he was city or federal. Maybe an assignment in Paris that hadn't worked out. And when he spoke, I knew he was a cop. I knew he had me spotted. The moment he said, "Will you work in Paris, buddy?"
"Will you work in Paris, bud? How'd you find it?
Do we have to get sociable?"
"I was just wondering, the fuss you made getting that trunk on the train. What's in it, anyway?"
"The Eiffel Tower."
"Okay, what's your name?"
"What are you, an income tax blank?"
No, I tell fortunes. You want to hear yours? The first night out, you'll drum up a little game. A friendly little game. For nickels and dimes, just to make it interesting. And the night before we dock, you'll make a killing."
"Oh, drop it.
"Okay, I'm only fooling."
"Oh, be careful, I'll die laughing."
"No, you won't, kid. You won't die laughing."
Sherbert showed about 1 o'clock. I was out in the vestibule with a trunk 10 minutes before the train started to slow down. It ran right out onto a double-decker pier broadside to the boat. I thank God for American ships. An American steward who spoke English. And it started again. The trunk was too big for the cabin, they said.
"I'm sorry, sir, but we don't allow heavy luggage in the cabin."
"I've got to have it in my cabin."
"I'm sorry, sir, but it's too large."
"But it's the only piece of luggage I've got. Surely I can have it with me for a day or so just till I get it unpacked."
"Perhaps you could open it here, sir. Remove the things you need for the trip, and
it's
then you..."
"It's got to go in my cabin, and that's that."
"What cabin are you in, sir?"
"42A.
"Well, that's a cabin for two, sir. You're sharing it with somebody. I'm afraid a thing that size would be annoying to the gentleman who..."
"If the gentleman wants the trunk in the cabin with him, let him have it."
"Listen, Fowler, why don't you mind your own business?"
"It is my business."
"What do you mean?"
"I'm in 42A myself. I don't need much room. Let him have the trunk, steward."
"Very well, sir."
"See you later, Sherman. We'll have lots of time to get to know each other. Sitting in that cabin all the way home."
I knew what had happened. Fowler had been standing behind me. I knew by the way the steward's opposition flattened like ice cream under a blowtorch that Fowler had placed his badge behind my back. He'd sized me up as off color. Now he was baiting me. Baiting me the way they'll bait any guy on the other side of the fence. Not sure, just suspicious and hoping for the worst. I had to get out of that cabin. They just have to change me. I couldn't cross the Atlantic with Fowler sleeping across from me or I'd go nuts. I hurried on board and made for the purser's office. There was a lineup, but finally I made it.
"You're welcome, madam. Hope you have a nice crossing."
"Thank you very much. You've been very kind."
"Yes, sir. Any spare cabin?"
"I think so, sir."
I find I'm sharing mine and I'd prefer to be alone."
"Well, I think that can be arranged. What cabin are you in now?"
42A.
"Is that Sherman?"
"That's right."
"I'm sorry, Mr. Sherman. I'm afraid there's nothing available at the moment. But if anything comes up, I'll give you first choice."
Fowler had beat me to it. He'd foreseen this move. He'd placed his badge and told them to leave things as they were. But he couldn't know what was in that trunk. He couldn't. He was playing a hunch. He knew I was nervous, and he was playing a hunch. I paced the deck until it began to get dark. It was hot July weather. I couldn't leave her in the trunk any longer. It was a small cabin, and I had to get rid of her that night. Finally, after I'd had four straight scotches in the bar, I went down to cabin 42A.
Well, I was wondering when you'd show up.
What's the idea? Window shut, fan off? Can't be that chilly in July.
Why all the yens for ventilation?
What do you mean?
You a fresh air fiend?
Not especially, just like a little breeze, that's all.
Why?
Oh, why shouldn't I?
I don't know. Go ahead, open the window.
Okay, thanks.
Not much breeze yet.
There's enough.
Enough for what?
What's biting you, Fowler?
Nothing, nothing at all.
All right, then pipe down.
What makes you so edgy?
I'm not edgy. You just get on my nerves, that's all.
Is there something on them already?
Now look here, Fowler.
No, no, let's not get excited. Let's go down and have dinner.
I got up off the bunk, took off my shirt, and threw it over the trunk. Then I took a long time washing my hands and face. I watched him every minute. I could see every move that he made in the mirror above the wash basin. He took a bottle of liquid shoe polish out of his bag, unscrewed the top, laid the bottle on the trunk. Then he started to clean a pair of blue suede shoes. I saw him deliberately upset the bottle all over my shirt. I saw him. You did that on purpose.
Now, look, Mr. Sherman.
I saw you. I saw you deliberately knock it over.
I'm awfully sorry. I didn't mean to. I'll be glad to pay for your shirt. What's it worth? $5, $10, you say?
You'll have to loan me one of yours.
Mean to say you haven't another shirt in that young bungalow you're carrying?
Listen to my mark, lousy or something. What are you hounding me for?
I'm not hounding you. I'm just curious. Never saw a man so concerned about a trunk. Every time anybody touches it or moves it, you scream like a stuck monkey. That makes me curious. I don't like being curious.
Oh, you don't.
No, I don't. Now, come on, open it up. Get a fresh shirt. Come on down and we'll have some dinner.
Nuts, I'll have my dinner sent in.
Okay, Sherman. Have it your way. There's no hurry. You got 8 days.
He finished dressing and went down to dinner alone. I locked the cabin door. And gritting my teeth, I opened the trunk. I didn't look. I just grabbed for shirts, underwear, ties, pajamas. Then I heard Fowler coming back. I'd fallen for it. He'd walked down the passageway and then come back. I couldn't get it shut again. It wasn't her. It was all the wood and the stuff I'd piled in. I tugged at it. It wouldn't shut. Oh, dear heaven, make it shut. Make it shut, please. Make it shut.
Hey, what is this, a lockout?
And then I saw it. My hairbrush between the edges at the bottom. I grabbed at it, shoved it back in. And it closed. I didn't know the door was locked.
I did, before I even tried the handle. I forgot my pipe.
Oh, yeah?
That's right. Oh, clean shirts. I see you opened it.
It's my trunk.
What are you carrying? Dope?
Oh, you're crazy. You're absolutely crazy.
Jewelry? Perfume? What?
Just you try and find out.
I'll find out, all right. Now that you got a clean shirt, you're still going to eat in here alone?
I went down to the dining room, but I didn't sit with him. I ate, but I couldn't taste anything. I didn't even know what I was eating. After dinner, I went back to the cabin and flung myself down on the bunk fully dressed. Sheer nervous prostration made me sleep. When I woke, the luminous hands on my watch said 3 o'clock. A thin shaft of light from the transom above the door made the room a little lighter than pitch dark. I could hear Fowler in the opposite bunk. His breathing was regular. In, out, I listened. For an hour, I listened. There's an art in pretending to be asleep. Nobody can do it for a whole hour. His breathing never varied, not by a catch or a gurgle. I had to get her out of that trunk. I had to. Either I did it tonight or it was finished. I made up my mind to try it. I edged out of the bunk, slowly. I didn't make a sound. I got the key from my pocket. I got the key into the lock. I turned. I twisted. It wouldn't open. Oh, dear, dear heaven, make it open. And then it turned. With hardly a sound, it turned. And Fowler went on breathing. Breathing. Then I went at the snaps. They were on springs, and they sounded like firecrackers exploding. Every noise, I died. Waiting for his breathing to stop, waiting for him to sit up, to pull a gun, to flash his badge. I covered the clasps with my handkerchief. Finally, I got them all open. And I started to tuck at it. I never heard such noise. To me, it sounded like an explosion, deafening. But Fowler went on breathing in, out. Inch by inch, I forced it open. Slowly. Silently. I hadn't wakened him. And I'd gotten it open. It took me 15 minutes, but I'd done it. I lifted her out. She was like a doll. Like a beautiful sleeping doll. I got through the door. Stood with her in my arms, a passageway. I stood there sweating, shaking, terrified. And then I heard someone coming. Someone was coming along the passageway. I pressed back into the recessed doorway, holding her in my arms, and the footsteps came nearer and nearer and nearer.
Wonderful evening, Gerald. See you in the morning. Now, don't ask if you can come in. It's nearly 3:30. What?
Just one thing.
Good night, Gerald.
Good night, darling.
They hadn't seen me. They hadn't seen me. I tiptoed along the passage. I climbed the flight of stairs at the end without making a sound. At the top, I had to open a heavy sliding door. In an instant, I was out on the deserted deck. I made for the stern of the boat. I hadn't gone 50 yards until I heard his footsteps behind me. I knew it was Fowler. He'd catch up with me in a matter of seconds. He'd see me, see her, see everything. I knew I'd have to face him, so I put her down on a deck chair and threw a blanket over her. And then I turned to face Fowler.
All right, Sherman, here's my badge, FBI. I'd like to talk to you.
What about?
What did you take out of that trunk?
Wouldn't you like to know?
It's an easy thing to speak to the captain and have it searched.
All right, go ahead. Have it searched.
I'll have you searched, too.
Go ahead.
Come along.
Now. Like the devil I will. I'm staying here.
You're coming with me.
I'm not.
Now, look, Sherman, I got a gun. I'm a federal agent. I'm ordering you to come with me, and if you put up a fight, I'll slug you. Now, be a good... Who's that?
Who?
The dame in the deck chair.
I don't know.
Oh, you got a shill working with you.
I don't know who she is.
Well, let's go over and introduce ourselves.
I hit him. I hit him with everything I had. He spun like a top. I hit him again and he slumped over the rail. Then I grabbed his feet and heaved. Ah! It didn't take a second to go back for her. I held her out over the black water, then let go. Then the whole ship blew up under me. Please, madam, control yourself. Quiet, everybody, quiet! Now tell me exactly what you did.
Well, I... Gerald and I danced until after 3. I went to my cabin. I was getting ready for bed when I heard 2 men fighting on deck. I put on a robe and at the door of my cabin I heard this scream, this terrible scream. I went up on deck and I saw him hold his man out over the water and let go. When the man fell, the blanket came loose. The wind blew it back under the deck. It landed right at my feet. And I found the badge. He murdered an FBI man. He's a murderer, I tell you, a murderer!
All right, Sherman, start talking.
So I told them. I told them everything. I confessed about the pearls, about Therese, about the trunk, about Fowler. Everything. It was after I'd made the confession that the purser told me. They took me down to a little room in the hold, a room with a big, heavy door on it. And that's when the purser let me have it.
You know, Sherman, you crooks are all alike. You think you're smart, but you're not. You're dumb.
Oh, lay off, will you? Lay off.
Sherman, you got a shock coming to you, a big shock.
What do you mean?
If you hadn't fought with Fowler, you'd have gotten away with it. There'd have been no scream, no badge, no fight. You could have dropped her overboard. You wouldn't have had to wrap her in a blanket. You could have just dropped her.
Are you crazy? I was there in the cabin with this FBI guy, and he knew. I had to get rid of him some way, didn't I?
No, you didn't.
What are you talking about?
15 minutes more, and we'd have gotten rid of Fowler for you. He'd be down here, and you'd be up in 42A, alone.
What are you trying to say to me?
We got a wire from the New York City police instructing us to arrest Fowler for impersonating an FBI agent and blackmailing people on ships.
What?
Fowler was a fake, Sherman, a crook. So you see, Fowler's murder could have been avoided. And the girls? Well, the girls would probably never have been discovered at all.
You have just heard Wardrobe Trunk by William Irish. The story was adapted for radio by Harry W. Junkin, who also directed the production. David Gothard starred as Babe Sherman. Joe DeSantis played Fowler. Other players included Inga Adams, Bill Lipton, and Ernest Graves. The music was composed and conducted by Dr. Roy Shield. Radio City Playhouse is supervised for the National Broadcasting Company by Richard P. McDonough.
This is Harry Junkin again. Next week on Radio City Playhouse, one of the most exciting stories we have ever presented. The story of a vague and indescribable evil that ruins the lives of three very fine people. Be with us next week for Treasure Trove, Attraction 32, next week on Radio City Playhouse. Good night, everybody.
Robert Warren speaking. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.